I made it work.
So it says that the meeting is now streaming live on Facebook. So that means that we are live.
Yeah, you could see the presentation. Did you want me to stop it?
Oh, no. You can keep it up there. You're first, right? Anyway. I love Marquita. I love Marquita's expression. Like, you're gonna learn today. But so hi you guys, welcome to the 2020 Reprocessing and Empowerment Workshop. We are members of a comprehensive group of clinicians that are in independent practice separately in various states and areas around the United States, and we are referred to as the Therapist Network. I am Dr. Jefferson, and I am the owner and operator of Familiar Bond Psychotherapy and Consultation Services here in Atlanta area. I have about 5 offices, physical locations, and I offer telehealth, behavioral health services for people who are struggling with a wide range of behavioral health issues and emotional health and stability issues, as well as family therapy issues because I'm a marriage and family therapist. So basically, we're committed to helping you guys create some space for healing and empowerment amidst the impact of COVID-19 and everything that 2020 has had to kind of throw our way. I know that we're coming up upon the holidays and the holidays this week, and navigating ourselves into next month. It's definitely especially difficult for people who struggle with anxiety, depression, and a host of other mental disorders. It's difficult because sometimes we just simply cannot get the type of support that we feel we should be getting from the people that we identify as supportive, you know, elements in our lives, essentially. Now, the holidays during COVID-19 is gonna look a lot different. We have an increased number of cases being reported around the United States, and different areas are now becoming hot zones that were not hot zones, and additional restrictions are being placed on states. And so I think it's especially a time for the vast majority of citizens to come together and clinicians to come together and create a space for people to start sharing some of their insights, some of the struggles that they've gone through during this time, and create a space that facilitates healing and revealing of those different layers that will give us the power that we need to continue to be resilient throughout the rest of this year. So without further ado, our first presenter today, because we're gonna do this thing a little bit different, and instead of us being in our breakout rooms like we're going to do this thing naturally, all of you guys that have signed up are now in this group. And what we'll do is we'll let Megan take it off first. She'll do her short presentation. During the time that we're talking, you can feel free to share your stories. All of us are logged into the Facebook group so we can see and communicate with you guys. We'll read the comments and things like that once we're done presenting some of the basic tenets of what we're going to talk to you guys specifically about. But we're also here to kind of share and hold space for whatever it is that you guys are going through, even if it's not depression or anxiety related, or, you know, related to relational issues or struggles with parenting or struggles with connecting with your parents if you're younger, those kinds of things. So whatever you're struggling with, feel free to share that with us, and we will try our best to facilitate some space for you guys to share and heal, and also connect you with additional resources if needed today. So I'll let you have it, Megan.
Hi, everyone. My name is Megan Harris, and I am a licensed professional counselor, and I'm very excited to be here today to just connect to the community and help during this time. I know we're going through a lot, and I'll kind of keep it short, but I just have a short presentation on navigating anxiety. Just some brief information about me. I am a licensed professional counselor in the states of Georgia and Michigan, owner of CEO Professional Services, where I offer individual, group, and family therapy. And I also have a side practice at Megan J Enterprises, where I do coaching. And we also have a mental health online store. So what I'm going to talk to you guys today about is anxiety. And again, this is just very basic, brief information regarding anxiety. And then we can go further into maybe specifically the anxiety that you guys are experiencing and how we can answer any questions or help you guys to process things that you've been feeling. All right, so let's first look at what is anxiety. All right, so according to the American Psychological Association, anxiety is an emotion characterized by feelings of tension, worried thoughts, and physical change, like increase in blood pressure. So anxiety is something that a lot of us experience at some point in time. And I would say, especially now, since we're going through a pandemic, that anxiety is probably heightened. So if it's something that you have not felt before, I'm sure at some point in time dealing with COVID-19 and the political things that are going on politically and Black Lives Matters movement and all the others that are going on this year, you might have felt some form of anxiety. So we'll look a little bit further into some different examples and give you different ways for you to cope with anxiety. All right, this is just a quote by C.S. Lewis. Mental health pain is less than physical pain, but it is also more common and also more hard to bear. So the mental and physical definitely go together, but sometimes when it comes to mental pain, it can be a lot heavier than physical pain. Physical pain goes away, but sometimes if it's not addressed or treated properly, it can stay with you for a long time and have a big impact. All right, so what does anxiety look like? Anxiety can have many different faces. Often it shows up in frustration, emotion, fear, maybe nervous, tension, despair, depression, stress. So in looking at this, it can have different faces, but I've just listed a few different ways that anxiety can show up in your life. All right, so anxiety is not necessarily bad. Sometimes when people think of anxiety, they think that, okay, what's wrong with me? I shouldn't be feeling this way. But anxiety is not all bad. There is everyday anxiety, and then there is an anxiety disorder. So for an example, if you have thoughts about paying bills, landing a job, or if you just went through a breakup or a life event such as what we're going through right now, having certain thoughts about that is normal. Now, when it turns into something a little bit more severe is when you're constantly thinking about it, you're worrying, it causes distress, it interferes with everyday life. That's when you have to look at, okay, this is something that is just not the typical basic anxiety. Another example, if there is a situation that happened socially where maybe you were embarrassed or you said something or you tripped and fell or something happened in that moment, yes, that can produce some anxiety. But if you're avoiding social situations or a fear of you're being judged and you don't want to go into social situations or you're embarrassed every single time you go into those, that is the extreme. So sometimes when I look at anxiety, I think about it being the extreme of things. And I'll go over one other example. let's say you're about to take a big test or give a speech or talk in front of a lot of people, sometimes you have butterflies in your stomach. That's normal. Sometimes you may feel a little anxious before you talk in front of people. That's normal. But if you start to have like panic attacks and your mind is just filled with worry and you're not able to break past that, again, that is the extreme. And that's when you're looking at something that's a little bit more severe, and it may be an anxiety disorder. So I have a few other things listed here. I'll just give you guys a moment, if you can see it, to see if there's other examples here that maybe you can relate to. All right. So statistic-wise, over the age of 18 suffer from anxiety. And I like to be careful with my terms. I would say more so deal with anxiety. And 36.9% receive treatment. So people have it. Sometimes people don't even know that they're dealing with it, but there are a relatively less than half of individuals that either know that they have anxiety or that they don't know that they have anxiety seek out some form of treatment options. And 8% of children and teenagers experience anxiety. They have the symptoms that develop before age 21. So sometimes knowing this in advance, you can get ahead of it and learn ways to cope and manage it. Anxiety disorder is the most common mental illness in the United States. Now, this may be different in other places, but this is just for the United States. So common symptoms of anxiety. There are multiple types. There's generalized anxiety. There are phobias. There's panic disorder, social anxiety disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, and post-traumatic stress disorder. So these are just a few different forms of anxiety and how it's broad. It's not just like in one category. It can be broken down into some of these subgroups. Some of the symptoms that you may experience are uncontrollable worry, sleep problems, muscle tension, upset stomach, some poor concentration, temporary memory loss. Sometimes your heart can increase. Sometimes you're feeling irritable, racing thoughts. Sometimes you have a change in your appetite or heightened awareness or feeling or being alert. Some other symptoms may include dry mouth, shaking, being extreme tired. Your energy can decrease. Possible change in weight, and that is your weight can either increase or decrease. Hair loss, dizziness, and I think I covered everything on the list, but these are just some of the symptoms that you may experience when it comes to anxiety. All right. So there are ways for you to cope with anxiety. One of the things that I specialize in is therapy, and I personally do a lot of CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, within my practice. There are other types of therapy, such as art therapy, where you may draw, and this is really helpful, especially with teenagers or children or individuals that have went through a form of trauma. This helps them to be able to work through what they're going through, but use it in art form. There's narrative therapy, where often involves telling a form of story. Exposure therapy, where you're exposing yourself to whatever the fear is or the areas that you're anxious about. There's mindfulness, and there is DBT. Some relaxation techniques can also help you cope with anxiety. This includes meditation, breathing, grounding activities, exercises, and just different things that just slow you down to reset what's going on physically. Because the physical part and the mental part are often connected. So the relaxation techniques can just help slow you down when it comes to feeling anxious. And then lifestyle changes, such as exercising, running, working out, doing yoga, self-care, taking breaks, taking care of yourself, getting massages. And self-care is not only, it's also mental. So allowing yourself to put yourself first, taking care of your thoughts, watching your thoughts, affirmations, and affirming yourself. And then finally, work-life balance. You have to have a balance between work and home, and sometimes balance that can help you decrease your anxiety. All right, some treatment options, kind of what I just discussed with lifestyle changes and some of the things that we talked about, exercising, things of that nature. Medication, and you could see your medical doctor, your psychiatrist prescribed medication, or you could see your primary care physician, your PCP, and they can prescribe you medication if your anxiety is extreme. I know everybody has their different beliefs about medication, but I'm a firm believer that therapy and medication can work together to get you to decreasing the anxiety that you're experiencing. So if you do take medication, I just recommend that you partner with therapy to help give you coping skills and things of that nature. And then support groups. Support groups can be groups with anxiety, trauma groups, support groups pertaining to relationships and anxiety. Having that support can help you to get coping skills, but also so you're not doing it by yourself. You're not alone. You have other people to partner with you. All right. And ways to get help. Again, talk to your doctor, your psychiatrist, or your therapist regarding treatment options. If you're looking for a therapist, you can always look and see the type of treatment that they specialize in. So at the beginning of the slides, we talked about like CBT, narrative therapy, DBT, those different types of therapies or modalities. You can look and see what they specialize in, and that can let you know, okay, well, they can help me get through what I'm going through with anxiety because of the areas that they specialize in. Reach out to other people such as family and friends and support. Sometimes your doctor is not available, so having friends and family can help during those in-between times, in between your appointment, and just having that community to lean onto. All right, and seeking mental health information by attending seminars, trainings, and conferences. There's so much out here now with trainings, and therapists are doing more. Following them on social media, there's so many resources that are available. And sometimes just following somebody and seeing their feeds can help you to get some you didn't know before. All right, so that is my very basic presentation on anxiety. And if you guys have any questions about it, let me know. Thank you. Dr. Jefferson, we're back to you.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, hold on. My camera is not quite on, I don't think. I still see your screen. Okay, I put video. So, okay, there I am. So, Marquita is going to give you guys a presentation next. And I know that some of you may be feeling a little bit apprehensive about posting your comments and your question inside of the group forum, but understand that it's the same as if you guys were on this side of the feed and face to face to everybody else. So it's a safe space for you to share. But your comments that are shared in my inbox, I can still share, but you know, the best way for you to get the help that you need is definitely to have a dialogue, open dialogue, you know, with us. And that's okay too. And if you're just not the person that wants to be typing and all of that stuff, that's all right as well. So the inbox is open. Also theirs as well. I'm not sure how you guys are set up on Facebook. Do you have like a filter for your inbox or do you take yours off? Messenger.
It's open. Okay. They would just have to send me a message and I'll have to accept it. But once I accept the first one, we can communicate.
Okay. So you can send Marquita a message. And Megan, is yours open?
Yes, mine should be open.
Okay. And hers will be open as well. So if you have individual questions for them that you don't want to kind of type on the feed, then you can do that. And also, Landon, he's definitely doing the moderation on that end. So, Megan, you shared a lot of information. And I want to say thank you. You did such a thorough job. And now you guys are going to prepare yourselves for the girth of information from Marquita. And I know that there are a tremendous amount of people from the posts that I've seen coming up and leading into this that are waiting on her presentation because she is covering the parenting tips and the real tough stuff because people are struggling right now with parenting during COVID-19. It's a lot of people that are struggling on whether or not to keep their kids in school in amidst the anxiety around whether or not their kids are going to be infected or reinfected and whether or not the schools can keep their kids safe. And then also you have parents at home that are trying to allow the digital learning process to be facilitated by public schools and feel like that process is failing for them. So it's a lot, there are a lot of issues that I've seen and those are some of the issues that you guys have typed just a few minutes ago in my inbox as well that go to Marquita. So she is going to be able to kind of better assist you guys with some tips and tricks and ways that you can manage that. And then you guys can type your individual commentary there after she's done the presentation. All right, so I'll let her take it away.
Hi guys. So I don't have a presentation like Ms. Harris. I'll have that next week when we do our breakout groups. However, I do want to kind of start in talking about myself a little bit. I've been working with kids for about 6 or 7 years now. And when you're working with kids, time just flies. It was never my intention to work with kids this long. However, I kind of just got stuck and I fell in love. Some of the things that I work with parents and kids on, mostly parents, because I always tend to have people understand that kids are very dependent and they depend on their parents. So it's better and it's healthier for the kid to work with the parent. So a lot of the things that I'm going to be offering is going to be skills for parents. So a little bit about myself before I get into that though. I am a licensed professional counselor. I have a private practice in Louisiana. I'm in the process of being licensed in a few other states right now. However, because of the pandemic and everything that we're going through, we're only allowed to do telehealth still for a while. So I am practicing only telehealth for now. I also work with a youth organization where I do group counseling for children ages 17 through 6 to 17, I said that backwards. But I work with a wide range of ages when it comes to kids. And there's different trials with each kid and each family. So part of what I wanted to offer, and it's going to be a lot more that'll be offered in the coming weeks, but part of what I wanted to offer is a space where parents can get together and talk about the trials of being a parent as well as work and COVID-19 and making decisions about parenting. Do you want to send your kids to school? Do you not want to send them to school? Are you afraid of sending your kids to school? There's so many questions and there's so many different responses, because actually the answer is different for each family. So one thing that I do want you guys to get out of this is understanding that your decisions are never wrong when it comes to your kids. So that's one thing, helping you guys making decisions as a family about your kids and how you want to educate your kids going forward. Because I know personally here in Louisiana, they opened up the schools and numbers went crazy again. And now they're in the process of possibly shutting down the schools again right after Thanksgiving break. So I know that some parents have a lot of questions about, should I be sending my kids to school? And, you know, I just wanted to provide a space where you guys can talk to each other and also, you know, facilitate a process where you can bring back to your family and make the decision for your kids that's best for you and your family. So some of the things that we're going to talk about outside of making that decision would be just basic parenting skills and kind of checking on your kids. A lot of times we tend to forget that everything we're enduring right now, these kids are enduring it as well. And sometimes it may be a little more confusing for them. Sometimes it may be some things that they just don't understand and they don't know how to come to you. So I want to talk about ways to provide information to your kids so that they are not as confused and kind of wandering in the dark like everybody else is. You know, just giving them a place of comfort, kind of like we're doing for parents here. I want to be able to teach parents to provide that same space for their kids so their kids can come and feel comfortable asking questions about COVID-19 and asking questions about grief, because a lot of kids are losing people. Kids are losing people for the first time and they're not sure how to process the loss. There's also a lot of lonely kids. The suicide rate has increased tremendously in juveniles. It's heartbreaking. However, it's the reality, and it just goes to show that what adults are going through, children are enduring as well. So those are some of the things that I want to talk about. One of the other things that I'm going to talk about in this 6-week process is communicating with your kids. Communication with kids, kind of like what I was just saying, making sure that they have outlets, making sure that you are clear to them so they aren't lost. And we want to talk about the difference between positive and negative communication and how we can use both of those to get the results that we want from our kids. Too often kids kind of get yelled at. You know, I see parents that's dealing with a lot of stuff, and then when the kid comes, it's kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back or something, and then the kid end up getting, you know, it happens in spousal relationships as well. You know, the person closest to you tend to have to deal with your rage a little bit more than others. So I want to make sure that you guys are aware and that you're not placing some of that uncertainty and discomfort that we're feeling on kids. And that's hard to do. But so I heard one of the things that Megan talked about was CBT. And that was also a note that I had here, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, which is my favorite form of therapy and my favorite approach when it comes to kids. And I'll break it down a little bit more than she did. It's not a hard process. But the process of cognitive behavioral therapy is actually being able to recognize your thoughts and recognizing how it affects your behavior. And then making a cognitive plan to change that if you want a different end result. So when I say that that's my favorite approach with kids, it's because kids tend to pay very close attention to us, and they tend to do what they see more than what they hear. So, you know, it's a big thing in a lot of communities to tell kids, you know, do what I say, not what I do. And it's crazy because they actually do the exact opposite. They do what they see, and hardly any of what they hear, even if they hear you. So one of the things that I also want to talk about is leading by example and how much of a impact that can make on kids' life. This day and age, a lot of kids don't have a lot of role models. I want to be able to give parents the skills so that they can be the role models for their kids in their homes. One of the other things that I want to talk about in this 6-week period is the structure in the home. Even if you're not going to have your kids doing virtual school or staying at home all the time, structure is very important for kids. Having a daily schedule is very important for kids. A lot of parents tend to kind of go about their day and they kind of, you know, throw out little things that they want their kids to do at random. And then they kind of get upset when the kid doesn't do it immediately or follow the directions how they expected them to, not realizing that they weren't clear from the beginning. So that kind of goes back to communication. And that's pretty much what providing a structure for kids is, communicating to kids what's their expectations. Structure is the way that we tend to get kids to mature. It helps them understand that outside of school, there are other responsibilities. And school provides a big structure. So if you are choosing to keep your kids at home, that's a long period of the day that you are required to provide that structure instead of the kids. So that's another topic that I want to cover. One of the other things that I want to talk about is parental breaks. You know, a lot of parents right now, they have their kids all the time, but they also feel guilty when they don't have their kids. A lot of parents are 24/7 parents right now, which is new to them. A lot of parents are teachers. A lot of parents are, carpooling and doing a lot of things that they haven't done previously before COVID-19. So I want to talk about some of the changes that COVID-19 has brought into place, and also talking about how parents can get a break. The biggest help for parental breaks is support systems. Of course, when we talk about breaks, we're going to talk about support systems and ways to not put, if you have younger kids and older kids, ways to not put so much of that burden of the younger kids onto the older kids. There's so many different dynamics because every family is different. So I want to definitely talk about parental breaks in this 6-week period. And I also want to talk about creating new traditions, because as we can't do the things we used to do. We can't go to the movies as a family anymore. At least those of us who are still a little free. We can't really go to the parks without excessively wiping down everything our children touch. Or we can't really go to the bowling alley. I know the bowling alley where I live now, because there's really nothing else to do, there's a cover charge. So if you're like a family of 4 or 5, you have to pay $20 per person just to get in the bowling alley. So a lot has changed, and I want to be able to give you guys some ideas on how to make new family traditions in the midst of COVID-19. So those are kind of a few of the little topics that I've ran through. Like Dr. Jefferson said, you guys can reach us through the live. You can ask questions. I am logged on to the live right now. I'm reading as we go through. You can also inbox me at any time, and I will be happy to answer your questions, help you personalize some things for your specific family. But my goal through all of this, and I want to make it clear, is that as parents, I don't want this period of time to be when we lose our kids. You know, it, one of the things that drew me to this topic is because so many kids are out of school right now with nothing going on. And they're actually losing, you know, educational time, and there's gonna be a significant delay in getting them back on track and where they need to be. I know personally, where I live, the kids were out of school for 6 months, from March to September, maybe. And now they're saying they're going to let them back out of school after Thanksgiving break. So they're going to be out for a week, but then they won't return after that because of the numbers. So one of the goals to this is just to make sure that I can reach as many parents as possible that are having issues with the new way of life and the new parenting, and helping them develop skills, not only from things that I can offer, but from each other, so that kids are not lost in this system. And that's the end of my little spiel.
Okay, so I have posted the vast majority of the questions that I've received on my side, on my end, for you guys, and you can tackle them kind of as they come through. And I was in the process of typing this one, and I was cued in by Cleta. So hold on just a second, because I'm going to read it out loud. The ladies on here are feeling overwhelmed, trying to balance the virtual school, work, and maintaining their relationships. They are feeling like they are having a meltdown, wondering how to balance and what to do. So either or both of you can chime in and kind of let them know what your feedback is on that. And I guess I can offer some very basic tips and tricks for myself. Because, you know, I'm a mother, psychotherapist, MD. I kind of wear a lot of hats during the week, and it is difficult. And I do have kids who are tethered to the public school system via virtual learning right now. Well, that's just one. But still, one kid, even if you got one kid at home, that's a handful. And, you know, one kid tethered to the virtual learning system right now amidst this adjustment with COVID-19 can be extremely difficult. And so what I'll say is the balance is keeping a sense of normalcy in your schedule and your routine. For me, because I'm an essential worker, nothing has really changed for me. And I was already telehealth prior to this coming on. And so, everything is really the same, but keeping the same routine, waking up at the same time, doing the same thing, continuing to get dressed, continuing to get the kids dressed, even if you don't have anywhere to go, even if you are having to stay at home with them now, work from home now, find a quiet space for you to be able to work at home. Find a simple routine for your kids to maintain. Make sure you're pre-packaging their lunches so that they're, you know, they have access to lunch and water, and they're not interrupting you while you're working unless it's an emergency. Make sure that you're coordinating schedule for communication with the teachers. And it says maintaining their relationships. That can definitely be a difficult one, because now you're kind of bound to the home with your kid all that time, and you don't want to take your child to a sitter so that you can go on a date. And some places haven't even opened up, right, for you to even do that. So create interesting ways for your child to have some time out of your hair. You know, maybe get them going with an activity, Play-Doh activity or something like that, that takes their attention for a minute. But it's also very intentional. And have them put that energy towards that. And then do yourself a little social distancing date via video call, you know, in a separate room. But so those are some little tidbits that I have, and I'll let you guys go ahead.
So some of the things that Dr. Jefferson was saying is kind of spot on. But I'll add to that, that if you're feeling overwhelmed, the first thing I always tell people to do is write down your obligations. Write down what is most important to you and sort some stuff out. For instance, I'll give an example. I say, what is most important to you? Most people automatically say, oh, my job. Well, the job is not always the most important thing to everybody. It's just an obligation. So I want you to start thinking about what is most important to you. Write it down in order of importance and allocate some time, kind of like what I was talking about with a structure for the kids. You know, maybe the most important thing to you only takes 15 minutes. For instance, for me, the most important thing is meditation or yoga as soon as I step foot, like soon as I put my feet on the floor in the morning. That helps me kind of gather my thoughts so that I can get my day together. I say write it down simply because if you take some stuff out of your head, you feel a little less stressed. If you don't feel like you have to remember everything. So write down what's most important to you. When it comes to dating, I like Dr. Jefferson said as well, you know, finding things that kids can do. But once again, I'll go back to what I was saying in my intro is finding supports. That could be brother, sister, mother, friend, someone else who has a young child who's interested in play dates. Supports are everything. And, you know, for a long time, we have lived independent of each other. We haven't been so dependent. And now is a time that communities are kind of making a comeback. And it's a good thing. So, you know, get to know your neighbors, get to know, you know, and I understand COVID's going on, but get your personal thermometer before each play date. Find some supports that are willing to help. It could be cousins. It could be, like she said, all daycares are not open. So supports may just be family right now. But finding supports for your kids and finding healthy activities for your kids to do. I tell people all the time, my favorite activity to do is coloring. I love to color. That probably speaks to why I deal with kids so well, but I love to color. So it can be something as simple as them coloring their favorite cartoon character just to get them out of your hair for a little while. And one of the other things that I want to add is the big thing that I heard her say is that the ladies are looking for balance. Balance is different for everybody. So that's why I wanted to offer the suggestion of writing everything down and allocating how much time you want to give to each activity. For instance, work, family, free time, family time, things of that sort. So balance is different for everybody. So first you have to understand what exactly is your balance.
Okay. I just have three quick things that I would say. And one of them is a repeat, so I won't take too much time on it. But first thing I would say is communicate. Communication is very important. Communicate with your children what's going on. And, you know, mommy needs time for date night, or this will be the time mommy spends with you. So I think communication is key. And as long as everybody within the household is talking and communicating, that can help keep things organized. Again, with what Marquita said, utilizing your village. Before, everybody wanted to, being independent is so popular, but in times like this, you really need to know who your support system is, know who your mutual friends are, the give and take of those relationships, and utilize those friendships to communicate your needs and what you need assistance with. Maybe it's watching your kids, maybe it's going on a play date or getting help around the house, balancing things. If those things catered, or if you're not utilizing your village, often you can have this heavy load on you, and it doesn't really have to be that heavy. But utilize the people in your community to help you take that load off. And finally, making a schedule throughout the day. And kind of like what Dr. Jefferson said, sticking with the routine. So maybe on Mondays, that may be date night. Tuesday may be time with child number one and two, or Wednesdays may be connecting with a friend. Thursday may be self-care. You don't really connect with anybody. So just maybe having a schedule, communicating that schedule, utilizing your village, those things I think can really help as much as possible be able to cope with everything going on. But just also keep in mind that things are different. And so it may be a little bit of trial and error to see what works for you in your unique family and situation.
So I've typed in, if you guys can address the questions that I've typed in from the inbox messages that I received, or any or any inbox messages that you guys have received as well. I know I spoke out the one and didn't type it, but that's a lot of messages so far, and we need to kind of go ahead and we can wrap up. Yeah.
Okay, so I can read the next one, and I guess we can all jump in to respond. Are you guys anxious about pregnancy and vaccination safety for your kids?
I'm trying to find the questions, y'all. I'm sorry.
Oh, you have
to. It's in the chat.
Ah, okay.
It's the first one.
And I even typed in the one that was from the live, I typed it in too on here as well. So basically you guys can kind of go off of here. It's easy for you to look in one space.
So I will say personally with that question, I'm a mother as well. I have a 6-year-old, and I try not to be anxious. I come from a spiritual standpoint, and I just try to lean on my faith with things concerning the unknown. And with that, kind of going towards the anxiety of just not being anxious about certain things coming up. So me personally, I am just going to take that situation when it comes, when the vaccine is here, and see what's all presented at that time, and then make a decision at that point. But I'm personally trying not to be anxious about anything because I don't really have any information, or I don't really know anything. So the more I think about it, that time frame of worrying about the unknown, it can keep me in an anxious spot for a while. So I just kind of choose to take it as it comes and then go from there. Anybody else want to respond on that one?
I was just reading through the questions.
I had somebody else type one, sent something to my inbox. So I was still, I was just typing that. So for me, I'm not anxious about the presidency. The presidential election has already kind of taken place. They're going to count and recount and validate the votes.
Here in Georgia.
Georgia. Yeah. So there is absolutely nothing for me to be anxious about when it comes to the presidency as an epidemiologist. So vaccine wise, I feel like once we've gone through if you guys only knew the precautions that are taken in order for vaccinations to be approved by the FDA. I feel like certain people aren't good for vaccinations and they let you know whether or not you have a risk, factor associated with you getting a vaccination. So yeah, no, not anxious about that either. I think it just, it's a thing where that if you're gonna have your children around a large population of other kids, vaccinations are a requirement to be in the school system. And so I think as a parent, you just have to prepare yourself. You have to ready yourself for that. That's all I have. Marquita, do you have anything?
I'll just add that when it comes to the presidency or vaccination safety or any topic, actually, sending your kids to school, anything like that, I just would add, and I'd always tell parents or just any individual, you don't have to be a parent. The biggest thing you can do is educate yourself. Education reduces a lot of anxiety. The more you know, the less anxiety you may have around a situation. For instance, if you educate yourself on how the president or the president-elect actually affects you, then you have less anxiety. For instance, a lot of people are worried about the taxes. A lot of people was worrying about the healthcare. Educate yourself on how those tax reforms or how that health care reform is going to affect you personally and go from there. It'll tend to reduce a lot of anxiety simply because the more you know, like I said, the less unknowns there are. And the same thing for vaccinations. There are so many different companies right now working on a vaccination. And to be honest, it is a little frightening sometimes. However, but you want to just make sure that you know as much as possible before you make a decision to vaccinate yourself or your children. So like I said, the biggest thing for me is education, whether it's the presidency, whether it's vaccination. The more you know, the calmer you tend to be about situations.
Well, sometimes I want to say, stay away from Google.
Right. I'm not telling you guys to get your information from Facebook. I'm telling you guys to get factual information and go from there.
Yeah, don't overdo it, because we know that when you struggle with anxiety, you're always feeling like you got to live a moment ahead and a moment ahead. Keep yourself in the present, but be cognizant of what's going on around you. So that just means be proactive, but not necessarily, all the way in next year, okay, with your plan.
Right. And I do understand that sometimes education can heighten some people's sensitivity. So if you know that you are that person, then scratch what I just said. That's not for you. But you have to know, your levels of what you can take and what you can deal with in order, I'm not telling you indulge yourself in finding out what the tax plan and read every page of the tax plan so that, that may make some people more anxious. So if you know yourself, then understand what your limitations are and do what's best for you.
Yeah. And then, for some of you who haven't even explored yet, go out there doing some personal reflective, just basic soul searching, basically. Figure out who you are. Figure out what works for you and what doesn't. Figure out what your triggers are. Figure out what aren't your triggers. Figure out what things you need work with and what things you don't. I think that earlier I heard Megan and Marquita mentioned they liked working with cognitive behavioral therapy modalities. Personally, I'm more of a DBT and, trauma-centered clinician. And when I do work, CBT is trauma-focused CBT. But dialectical behavioral therapy is one of those that will help you have you doing that very detailed, individualized work and allowing you to manifest greatness within yourself because you are getting more, acquainted with yourself. So I would say do that, you know. I'll let you guys go ahead because we're running. We have like 23 minutes left and we got a couple of more questions left to go. Can I see a counselor and not have...
So I read that question as well. I'm not sure what record you don't want it to be seen on. Like, counseling records are pretty confidential. Any records that anybody, like, I know for a fact that anytime somebody wants records about counseling, it has to be written and it has to be approved by the participant. So I was just curious as to what record you don't want it to be shown on, because I don't think there's any record. I mean, it'd probably be on your insurance record other than that. But it won't actually say counseling. It'll say that, you know, the insurance paid such and such to this particular company.
I think they're probably, and again, I won't know unless they confirm, but I'm assuming they're meaning like, okay, if they want to go purchase a weapon or a gun, will that show up on their record or does it impact them in getting a job? If there's records of a mental health, a particular mental health diagnosis. So that's what I'm assuming they're talking about. And unless I'm incorrect off of my knowledge. Based off of my knowledge. Go ahead. You go ahead.
So that probably is it, because it came from the same person that asked the question about the presidency and the vaccine. Now I'm putting the two and two together. I get it now, you guys. I had a slow moment, but yeah. So I know a lot of people have been talking about the likelihood that because Joe Biden has been elected as president, he's going to make it mandatory because he's a Democrat for people to get the vaccination and all that great stuff. And equally, they've been talking about limiting access to guns. And I think that's a very good hot topic for us to talk about. And we could definitely delve into that and hopefully, and maybe I'll do a live on that later on today. But I don't know how that would impact your record just because you see a counselor. Now, what is typically used is inpatient hospitalization records for acute psychosis, brief psychotic episodes, schizophrenia, things like that. You know, things that are considered to be psychotic disorders, or they look at your history with aggression and battery and things like that as far as your arrest record, but not based on you.
Don't they look at 1013?
Yeah, the 1013 would be the inpatient hospitalization part, because mm-hmm. it's also different in different places. But, you know, whether it's voluntary or involuntary, inpatient hospitalization, say, so if you're inpatient somewhere, that's what they can see, because typically what happens if you're in a crisis, mental health crisis situation like that, police call GCAL or the National Suicide and Crisis Prevention Line, and then there is a record of that piece. But, you know, and that's in CCID, but if you're seeing a counselor, they're not linked to those types of records. And even in those types of records, you still have privilege to privacy. So unless they do stiffen those laws more, which still won't solve the problem with the gun control and the street violence and things like that, because those people don't have a license for their weapons, you know, no, seeing a counselor wouldn't go on that record.
So I mean, if you have concerns, I would say if you're just seeing a counselor for outpatient, if you have any concerns, I would recommend just doing self-pay. That way you can ensure that there's, I mean, nothing really going through unless you write a release of information for it to go through.
Yeah, and that is definitely another option, because then you don't have to worry about some insurance company running your stuff through a centralized system and other people being able to pick up on it. So yeah, that is an option as well.
Yeah.
How are counselors dealing with our inability to pay because we lost our insurance and, excuse me, are now depressed since we lost our jobs? Well, I have a sliding fee scale, and I also have what I call indigent funding source within my private practice. So I have a pot of money that typically other patients have contributed to, and other contributors like sponsors and things like that in my practice, they've put money in to help people who cannot afford to pay. And then they fill out a financial affidavit. And once you qualify, if we have the additional slots available at that time, then we slot you in. But since COVID-19, there has been an influx of people who have an inability to pay now. And so what I have been doing is opening up more availability for crisis prevention services, and at least once every other week, one free session every other week for those people that are struggling now to pay, so that they can at least remain stable. So, and then I guess I'll just write it off, right? That's what we do. So, we're in a very difficult time right now.
Right. Some of the things that I have implemented, and my private practice is fairly new. However, my nonprofit organization deals with children. And some of the things that I have implemented is I do a free group of six every 6 weeks or so of children. I find that group counseling is, because we still have to be paid. We're suffering through the pandemic just like you guys. So I find group counseling is a little bit more affordable. At this time, I'm just recently starting to do more parental groups, but at first it had been kind of like children. And pretty much I'm scheduling a lot of groups so that I can get in a few more people, but also kind of balance out the pay. Like I'll charge, for instance, a little less for a group versus an individual session. So it kind of works out because I have less groups. It's not actual one-on-one counseling, but you still get the feedback from myself as a counselor, but also your peers that is in the group. That's one thing that I implemented. Also, I'm in the process of, like I said, my private practice is fairly new. So I'm in the process of creating a sliding scale for pay. But other than that, you know, we're going through this just like you guys. So we're trying to find creative ways to provide services that are affordable. Just like you guys, you know, you talked about losing your job. My actual job is closing December 31st for good. So then I'll be, and I've worked at that job, like I said, for 7 or 8 years now. So then I will be strictly private practice. So that's new for me. So it's some uncertainty everywhere. But those are just a few of the things that I'm trying to lessen the effect.
Mm-hmm. I had a scholarship that I've had in place since I opened my practice. And so that's been pretty successful as far as having a set fee. And I have so many people under that scholarship price for either individual or couple therapy. So since 2020 going on, of course, the number has it's like tripled. So I'm currently working on something that is similar to Dr. Jefferson to have donations where people can put towards the scholarship amount so that they're still being able to run practice, but also people can still be seen for services.
Okay. So the next question is, how do we get medicine when we don't have money now? Psychotropic meds or regular medication? Because okay, so I'll say this. GoodRx is a great app to have. If you don't have it, all physicians, we have it because it's really, really, it helps us to be able to do our job more effective when seeing patients because we can give them an option of, well, we know that your insurance is more than likely going to cover this, but your copay may be high, right? And then for those people who don't have insurance, it may be cheaper for you to just go ahead and get it from the GoodRx. The app will show you when you put your zip code in, the closest place that you can go to and use the GoodRx prescription discount program, and everybody qualifies for it, to get your prescriptions or even over-the-counter medicine. It'll give you a price comparison. So you will know, okay, and it'll also give you the generic of it and how much it costs and whether or not you need to get it from Sam's Club or Costco, you know, those kinds of things. But yeah, so that's the easiest way, I think, to find more affordable insurance medication. But also, if you cannot afford your medication at all and you need prescriptions, your local county health department, regardless of what state you live in, has the ability to provide your medications for you and healthcare for you. It's based off of income. So if you're not having and generating any income in, they do have to be able to give that to you for free, because typically the way that goes, they'll ask you, hey, how much can you pay, right? Well, how much can you pay? Can you pay 50 cents? So if you can't pay 50 cents, they have to still give it to you because they can't deny care based off the fact that you don't have insurance or you don't have money. So yeah, that's my answer for that. Do you guys have anything else?
I was like, you kind of covered it in the end. I was just going to add that I know this is a difficult time right now, and you guys should, you know, everybody has pride, but don't be too prideful to attend your local mental health, or don't be too prideful to apply for Medicaid and Medicare and services that would not normally apply to you. I know it, like I say, it's a blow to your pride, but you have people that depend on you. You have, you know, I'm always thinking about children. More than likely, most people are parents. You have people that look up to you, and the best thing for kids is to see healthy parents. So I would just recommend that you not allow your pride to get in the way of something that can be detrimental to your family.
Right. Agreed. And hopefully with this shift in presidency, maybe we'll have people that are more willing to adjust the Affordable Care Act and allow more people to qualify for covered healthcare insurance that's not a part of the marketplace, because I know a lot of people have reached out to me about that too. And that's been a lot of the distress of people, you know, around this time, saying, okay, so what does that mean for us? Because we can't afford to pay for the marketplace insurance. We don't qualify for Medicaid because we're not, you know, a pregnant or childbearing female, you know what I mean? It's a lot of gray area. And I feel like, you know, it is very hard for people, you know, and I definitely sympathize, you know, with those people that are struggling with understanding even kind of where to go with that. But that's why I always redirect people to the local county health department, because if we have that, when you do fail to qualify for health care and coverage through Medicaid, state funded insurance, at least you have something, you know. Is venting good for anxiety? That one was on the live stream comment.
I'll take a shot at that one. I don't think venting is ever bad. Unless it's like ill-willed and towards someone else. I don't think you should ever vent to the person that you're upset with if you're, you know, venting about being upset. But as far as venting for anxiety, like I said earlier, and this will be my only comment, I'll let Megan go ahead and answer more about that. But as far as venting for anxiety, I think that it can be helpful simply because I'm big on getting things out of your head and into the atmosphere, so that, because most anxiety is created in your head. So I'm big on getting things out of your mind and creating a little bit more free space there. So venting can happen as journaling. Venting can happen verbally. There's many different ways to vent, but I don't see how it could be bad for anxiety.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was. Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to say. Is you kind of have to know yourself, and through self-care, knowing yourself and how self-awareness and how you operate. Like for me, example, I am a type of person that I don't really like writing, but I do like verbalizing things. So my venting may even look like, it may not be a friend there, but I may just be recording myself and allowing myself to speak out how I'm feeling. So it's not really going to anybody else. I just may record myself a voice memo and then delete it later on. You know, there's other people that write, they don't really like to talk. They like to, other people, they like to draw. So it can, venting can have different faces and it can look different. It's just a matter of knowing how you're wired and what works best for you. And that's why therapy is so important, because some sessions, I've been in some sessions and people have all this stuff pinned in that they have it out. And like half of the session is, let me just get this out. And by the time they get all of that out, they feel so much better because they haven't had a safe space to talk through how they're feeling and everything that's going on inside. So often it provides a relief, but also the environment and having that space, that safe space, such as a therapy officer, a close friend or family member, could be helpful. So definitely knowing when to vent, where to vent, and the type of format that you use for venting can be healthy.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Did you have anything for the last question, Megan? How to get medication?
Oh no, everything you guys said was great. I know we're kind of pressed on time, so I don't want to repeat anything that you guys said. It was great.
So the next one is, some are having trouble with anxiety as far as confidence and self-love, self-confidence and self-loving self, dreading what they see in the mirror. What do you guys suggest for increasing their self-confidence and love for self? I know Marquita and I just talked about, I feel like we just talked about this. Let me tell you something. If you walk across, you walk past that mirror, you better go ahead and blame it on COVID-19. She just said that the other night. Look, blame it on COVID-19. We're working from home and you just see the top up image. So if you walk past that mirror, you see, oh my God, whose butt is that? Oh my Jesus, ain't nobody pregnant over here. You better say, all right, COVID-19. Look, 2020 has done a lot to a lot of things in your body, in your mind, in your soul, all of that. Okay, it's been just gut-wrenching. Gut-growing sometimes. But that's where your stress actually is stored in your body from a medical stand. Your stress is stored in your midsection of your body because cortisol has nowhere else to go. It's stored in those outer pockets of the muscular structure of your belly. And so you're getting sick in that section. You're just a little COVID-19 pandemic struck it's okay. You know what I'm saying? You know, I call it COVID-19 quarantine syndrome. It's okay. Just go ahead. You can work that stuff off. When everybody's cooties goes away, you know, and they go in their house, go out there with your lights off through the atmosphere and just do your quick job. But yeah, you've just got to tell yourself that you are worthy. Words of affirmation, even if you got to put them on sticky notes around your house. You are worthy. This is temporary because it is, you know, and better days are coming tomorrow. There is always light on the other end of the tunnel, and you have to be optimistic about that. I think Megan is the one that mentioned something about faith earlier. And I tell people all the time, you either have to live a life based on doubt, or you live a life based on faith, because faith is a doubt buster. Doubt is a faith buster. And they can't live in the same house. They just can't. And so you have to learn how to replace one with the other. Ask yourself which one you love more. So the positive energy and positive outcomes, positive impacts come from putting those words of confirmation into your life.
I will add, I love the affirmations. I'm big on affirmations. When I walk out of my door every day, there's a sticky behind the door that says, have a great day today. Like, you know, so I tend to post things around my house that I need. So first you have to be aware of what you're struggling with. And that way you can play into what makes you feel better. I tell people all the time, do what makes you feel good. If it does not make you feel good, stay away from it. That goes for people as well. Be around people that make you feel good. If you have people around you that do not make you feel good, always bringing out the negative, try and avoid them, because we have a lot of negative things going on every day already, and we just don't need that extra. As far as self-love, that's something that comes from within. And that's something that I think it would be very beneficial, you know, if that's something that you're struggling with and you do have the finances, to maybe sit down and do some one-on-one, whether it's group or individual counseling, on, you know, what's the barriers to you loving yourself, or are you liking what you see in the mirror, and then allowing somebody to help make a plan on how to address that. It's a struggle. It's a day-to-day struggle. I tell people all the time, don't think that because we are counselors, like Dr. Jefferson was just saying, you know, she and I were just talking about the struggle that we go through since COVID, because we're not out of the house often. So when we do step out of the house, there's like, you know, I was joking, telling her, like, you know, most of my clients are telehealth. So now sometimes I leave out of the house and I forget I got a headscarf on, or I forget I got slippers on or something, because I'm so used to being inside. So my suggestion would be to understand what it's going to take to love yourself, and what it's going to take to like the image that you see in a mirror, and do small steps to get there every day. One of the big things, like she said, was affirmations. And another thing that I always recommend to people is making sure that you like what you see in the mirror. Like, fake it till you make it, you know. For instance, you know, it took a long time for me to love my bare face and to be able to be on Zoom and have this conversation. You know, many days I got up and I was late to work because I had to have a full face of makeup every single day in order to love me. So until you get to that place of accepting who you are and where you are, fake it till you make it. It's okay. We all do it.
Yes. So I was just going to say that I'm personally an individual that if there's something, I try to evaluate the things that I can change and the things that I can't change. So if there's certain things that I can't change, like my height or, you know, my skin color, things like that, I grow to love through work, you know, either working with a therapist or books or doing the individual work to love the things I cannot change. But the things that I can change, like the other day, well, not the other day, about a month ago, I walked in front of the mirror and I put on more weight than what I was comfortable with. And so I put a personal plan together to work on the things that I can change. And so because I'm very busy, that included, okay, well, let me just go out for a walk maybe on my breaks in between clients. Maybe I could just go for a walk, or maybe I could do quick little jumping jacks or something like that, to where I'm putting action towards getting the results that I wanna see. And for me, that helps motivate me. And once I start seeing some of those results, it motivates me even more to keep doing it. So I would recommend that, definitely what Marquita said with the self-work and the self-love within and going on that self-discovery, but then seeing, okay, what things can I change? What things can I not change? And try to hone in on the things that you can change and put action towards those things.
And then finding ways to accept and love the things that you cannot change, and understanding the why they are there,
yep,
why we are there, and what things they help to bring as far as the positive connotations and changes to your life that you needed, some of the value that they add to your life. Because some things that we don't necessarily like or admire are really beneficial for us, and we just don't give the credit that it's due. But yeah, mm-hmm. So in the interest of time, I'm going to move forward so we can get to these last two. My husband left during this time because I lost my job. What do I do? Well, that's interesting.
I think that's I'll say this, in that I think that's a loaded question and statement.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to pick my words cautiously, as I think my fellow colleagues are doing here as well. So it says, because I lost my job, that sticks out the most to me. And the questions that I have there is, what was going on? Like, what were the prior conditions? Was it really because you lost your job, or were you guys having some other issues prior to that? That's a red flag for me. It brings up a lot of other questions. And then there's also the, what do I do? I don't think that's something that any of us can tell you. I don't think we can tell you what to do, but I do think that if this is something that replays in your mind every day more than 3 or 4 times, like, what do I do when you're actually stuck, that it may be beneficial to talk to somebody about the situation.
That was nicely put. We need kind of more, a little bit more information. There's a lot of questions that I have, and it's kind of hard to answer the question thoroughly without having more context and background information. And so I would definitely recommend that you partner with a therapist or somebody that help you process through what happened and help you put a plan together to move forward, because in that setting you can give more information and they can steer you in the right direction.
So I would say the first step is to move into a place of radical acceptance, and that's that this situation is what it is right now. Because it sounds like you're kind of struggling with the situation being what it is right now, based off of kind of like your perceptual reasoning. And that happens. all of us think that we need to have the reason. We need to have the reason. And when we find the reason doesn't always necessarily fit the narrative of what's really going on in our life. And if it does, it's still not enough for us because we're still lost and confused as to what we need to do in our life. So then partner yourself up with somebody that makes sense for you. Psychology Today, goodtherapy.org, Mental Health Networker, those are great resources for you to find somebody to work with in your area. I'm not sure where you are. I think that was somebody in Pennsylvania, but yeah, that's what I would do, because that's a lot. Relational grief around this time is really, really helpful. Really, really help heavy. And so it's, yeah, that's a lot. But I definitely feel your pain. And yeah, I'm sorry that you have to be going through that on top of all of this. Mm. So getting to our last question before we close out, how are you guys dealing with grief? That one's kind of tough, you know, because I've had family members of mine and friends of mine who have lost their lives due to complications around treatment of COVID-19. And then I've lost family members to suicide during this time. And I've also here recently, a couple of days ago, lost a close friend and colleague. And I definitely want to say my thoughts and my heart is still definitely with his family. A couple of days ago, Knox, he was murdered here in Atlanta, and he's a teacher in Cobb County here. So it's a impactful thing, I think, to the community, to everybody who knew him. And I think you just have to deal with the reality. You know, reality is death is a part of the continuum of life. And it sucks. It really does. But we have to come to a place to where our hearts are able enough to be forgiving and yielding and accepting of that reality. And when we do that, it allows us to be, I don't know, at peace in a sense with yeah. their ascension. It's going to hurt because first we think we have to let go. But you find ways to continue to allow them to live on as a manifestation of their energy that they left and they impacted your life with. So for me, that's definitely how I'm dealing. I don't know about you guys.
I can speak from a personal perspective in saying that I have lost a good bit of people. And not all close relatives, however, really close friends of mine losing parents and things like that. And that, you know, is sometimes seen as that's just like family. My biggest thing is, I had to learn to give myself the time. We tend to think because my biggest loss this year, my grandmother died in March, kind of before all of this even really kicked off, like right before. We actually funeralized her right before they shut everything down, like the weekend before. So that was my biggest loss this year. And, you know, by June or July, I expected myself to be normal again. And I had to give myself permission to say, you know what, I don't know how long it's gonna take. I may never be normal again. So the first thing I would suggest to anybody dealing with grief is to not put a time limit on what grief looks like, because the reality is we're going to deal with it throughout our entire lives. And the second thing that I would offer is kind of like Dr. Jefferson said, is understanding the continuum in life. Kind of like I said earlier, understanding the facts of things tends to lessen the feelings. Sometimes being a little more rational, you know, if you had someone that was ill, someone that was sick, understanding that I heard her say, you know, death is hard for all of us, but actually death is just hard for the living. So, you know, understanding that the deceased is in a better place, they're in a happy place. We are the ones that's struggling with their process, and understanding that sometimes grief comes from a place of selfishness. You know, so understanding a lot of times when we're grieving, it's because I want this person here because of something that they provided for my life in a way. So understanding what your grief is surrounded by, and also taking time to process your grief. Sometimes you got to step away from everything. I know it took me until August to realize, like, my grandmother died in March, and it took me until August to realize that I needed to step away from counseling for a while. And I did that for 2 weeks, and it made a huge difference in my performance and my attention span and things of that sort. So take time to process it. Take time to shut things down and say, you know what? I'm gonna deal with this and only this for now. It's kind of like telling you to take time to feel it and not rush the feeling.
Megan, did you have anything?
Yeah, everything that everybody has said so far, and just understanding that there are different emotions that you're gonna go through, such as anger, sadness, grief, guilt. You know, there's emotions that you're going to go through, and just allowing yourself to go through those emotions and feel them, even though it's not going to feel good. Like, it's not, I think sometimes when it comes to grief or loss, there's a notion that, okay, well, maybe at some point it's going to feel good. It's not going good. Mental pain and physical pain are two things that people try to avoid. And I know when it comes to the losses that I've experienced, I guess mentally preparing myself for going through those painful times and allowing myself to wait of it. And while I'm doing that, kind of pushing other things to the side so that I have the space and capacity to actually go through the process, because it's hard to do that if you're have so many other things that are going on simultaneously. So, you know, I give myself the time to feel and get through what I'm getting through. And I communicate that to some other people I'm around, like, hey, don't expect me to show up in these other ways right now. I have this process I have to go through, and I'm going to take the time to do it. And then also not allowing people to tell you, I think somebody else already stated this, how long the process should be and how you should be feeling when you're going through it. No, this is your process. You are different. If you want to cry, cry. If you want to scream in a pillow, scream in that pillow. You know, whatever works for you to get you through this process is the most important. And allowing yourself to do that, and not looking at other people and saying, oh, it has to look this way or look that way. So that, I think, to me, that's one of the healthiest ways to get through grief. Sometimes it may take a year. Sometimes it may take a few months. Anniversaries are always big as well. So acknowledging when those times are occurring and give yourself that space. Hey, it's been a month. This is an anniversary of when it happened. It's been a year. Or maybe if something's big with the holidays coming up, and remembering those individuals that have passed away, just allowing yourself to make space for that and not really be apologetic for that.
I agree. So in wrapping up, you guys have both Megan and Marquita's information. When you log in next week, you guys can use whatever the email that came back from the Eventbrite when you registered. You can use that email to log in, because I'm not sure what happens. I think when I promo freed it, I think what happened is it changed the way they came through. So when I was hitting accept, it wouldn't allow me to accept or pull you guys through to this, but hopefully I can resolve that with Zoom, and everything will be back to normal next week. So let's plan to log in on Zoom regularly next week, and I'll have everybody on, and you guys can try and get on here maybe 5 or 10 minutes early, as far as the participants, and we can see if this stuff will work. And that's about it. That's all I've got. It's been great with you guys. Whatever questions you share with Megan or Marquita, and I think everybody else will be on next week as well. But whatever questions they share with you guys can always bring that to, if they decide to be in your groups, just shoot it to me, like at the beginning, so I can know who to put where in what rooms, and we can address those additional questions at the top of next week's meeting. All right.
Sounds good.
So I'm going to disconnect from the live stream. There we go. And stop the